This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-490-1099 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-490-1099.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Ben Shapiro, welcome to the program, sir. How are you?
Hey, doing pretty well. How are you?
Very good. So we find out now that it is indeed a Jew, Ben Shapiro, that has been torching Donald Trump. They were right all along. They were right all along, Ben.
If only they'd known I was an international banker, this would have changed everything.
That's right.
It is amazing how all of the people who foisted Donald Trump on us in the primaries are now insisting that anyone who says that Donald Trump was a bad candidate from the beginning is at fault here. If only we had jumped on the Trump train sooner, then he'd be losing by presumably 6 points instead of by eight. So everybody's preparing for the post-election fallout, the people who timed themselves to this electrical fire more than anybody else. I mean, they're already prepping Trump TV, and I look forward to the lineup, including some of our good friends who will presumably be appearing shortly. I mean, Trump debuted Trump TV in the middle of the debate last night, and it's clear that's what this rigging talk is about. By the way, this whole routine is not designed to win any votes. No independent voter across the country is going, well, if Trump says it's rigged, that means I'm going to vote for that guy. This is all about just the coalition of the dispossessed. It's about creating a grievance culture where people think that the real reason Trump lost wasn't because he's the worst major party candidate in presidential history. No, the real reason he lost is because there are all these evil media people and evil pollsters and evil voting fraud gurus and the never Trumpers who combine to stop him. And the only way that you're going to be able to fight back against those people is by paying $10.99 a month to watch Laura Ingraham talk to Sean Hannity about the wonders of Donald Trump.
So, Ben, how does this actually shape up at the end, because he is not going away? As you said during the debate two nights ago, he was debuting Trump TV. The BBC even tweeted that. Are we watching the beginning of Trump TV? It was clear that was the prototype broadcast of what is coming. He's not going away. And the reason why he hit Hillary as hard as he did was not to expand his base, which he had to do. It was to make sure that his base was diehard for him. They are going to say that it was rigged. They're going to blame it on the GOP. They're going to blame it on the media. They're going to blame it on people like you, people like me. And a good portion of those people are going to believe that from now until the end of time.
That's the scam, that was Steve Bannon's scam, when he moved over from Breitbart. I said it immediately on them hiring him, that Bannon is too smart not to have a backup plan. His backup plan is if Trump loses, they convert, a million or 2 million of the big Trump fans into a subscriber base for some sort of TV network. That was always the plan here. I mean, Trump is not a great businessman. He's a great branding magnate. His brand is ruined internationally because of all the things that he's done and said in this election cycle. But that doesn't mean you can't make a lot of money off of the diehards. They're attempting to increase the number of diehards here by suddenly mirroring all the Tea Party language that Trump despised at the time, but suddenly he's a Tea Partier because they're trying to grab onto that audience, hold them tight, and then claim the real reason that people have moved away from him is not because he's not conservative enough, not because he has no values. The reason that people moved away from him is, of course, because he's just too tough and we're too wimpy to really take the fight to the enemy.
So with Steve Bannon, who is, and you worked for him for years, or worked with him for years, one of the more despicable men alive, would you agree?
Yeah, I'm not a Steve Bannon fan.
Yeah, okay.
He's a bad guy.
Right. A really bad guy. He will use. I don't know if he believes in the alt-right, but he is certainly willing to use the alt-right for fuel. This is going to be a very bad chemistry lab experiment that could blow the conservative movement sky high. How do we navigate around this? How do you expose what's coming and what they're going to be doing?
Well, I mean, I think the only thing we can do is, of course, tell the truth about what's going on, which this is sort of the final con in what has been a con of a campaign. But beyond that, I think that we also have to make clear some stuff that you've been saying, Glenn, I think has been useful in this respect, and I've been trying to say the same thing. My hard feelings are not with the people who feel like they have to vote for Donald Trump in order to stop Hillary Clinton. I totally understand
Correct.
That logic.
I
you
do,
know,
too.
I think that I wake up every morning trying to figure out for myself on a personal level, is that logic that predominates over other logic that suggests you can't vote for this guy?
I will hang on just a second. Before you say any more, was there a time, any time at all in the first 10 minutes a couple of nights ago on the debate when you heard her talk about the Constitution, the Supreme Court, the Second Amendment, and abortion, that before he started talking, that you said, I have to consider voting for Donald Trump? She is awful.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every time she opens her mouth, I have to consider
right.
voting for Trump. I
right.
mean, and I think that that's true for virtually everybody who considers
I agree.
Himself never Trump. You know,
and I think that's why both of us and all of us, we do not condemn anyone who is voting for Donald Trump. We get it. We totally get it. Unless you were part
right,
of
exactly.
the alt-right that, you know, when you had 16 others in front of you, I don't understand that.
Right, and even if you had 16 others in front of you, but you weren't following the news that closely, and all you saw was sort of the headlines that he's going to be a fighter.
Yeah,
but if
I agree.
Somebody who backed him because you are sort of a nationalist populist and you want that to replace the constitutional conservatism that's always driven the Republican Party or has since the Reagan era, then that's the part I don't understand. I think that what you're seeing is sort of a preemptive strike from a lot of the Trumpkins, the Bannons of the world, saying, look, we know we're going to go down in flames here, but we have to make it seem as though people like Beck and Shapiro and people who aren't going to vote for Trump are sneering at you. Like they're looking down their nose at you for voting Trump. I'm not looking down my nose at anybody. I've made a personal calculation. I've never said to anybody, I'm encouraging you not to vote for Donald Trump. I have said that here's my calculation. Well, I'm not voting for Trump. I think that watching him take the heart out of the Republican Party over the last year alone is good evidence that he's going to do much worse over the next 8 years and pervert the Republican Party into the Steve Bannon alt-right. And that is something that I'm not going to stand around for. But, you know, that said, I understand the differing risk assessment that people have.
Garrett,
the Civil War is entirely a creation of the Bannon Trump brigade. They want the Civil War. Neither you nor I want the Civil War. We would like to see us come together and actually fight the left. Listen, the reason that I opposed Trump in the primaries is because I thought he's an agent of the left. I still think that he's a leftist in his heart.
I do too. I don't think he's I don't think you meant that literally. But there are some that, I mean, and I think you could make a pretty strong case that Bill Clinton, you know, called him up a week before and was like, hey, Don, I know you're thinking about it. You should do it, you know, because it'll be good for your brand and you'll be able to have fun and, you know, it'll help. You'll be able to clean up those crazies on the right.
Look, I don't think Trump's a plant, but if he were, I'm not sure he'd be acting much differently than he has been for the past
Correct.
Few months.
Correct.
I think Trump's an ad hoc guy who's never really thought about politics very much. What he does think is about an inch deep. He has no ties to the Constitution. He has no ties to conservatism. And so he's this sort of reactionary who doesn't like some of the stuff that he saw from Barack Obama. That's all.
So let's just assume that the polls don't change because he didn't have a game-changing debate. And let's say the polls are accurate, which is still an if, and Donald Trump loses. We know what he's going to do. He's going to start Trump TV. There will be an alt-right party that grows out of this. Let's talk about how do we come together enough to stop Hillary Clinton? Because that's going to be the important part. And I will tell you, because some show hosts have said, I will never come together with you. I will condemn you for losing the vote for Donald Trump. So how do we get together and stand together as a block to block Hillary if she wins?
You know, I think that we're going to have to ignore the slings and arrows. I think that unfortunately, this is a situation There's a phrase in the Jewish prayer service where it talks about let my soul be its dust to the people who criticize me. I think there's going to have to be some of that. I think that, yeah, we're it's your
hang on.
Hillary who's elected.
Ben, you're going to have to, I don't know if you just walked into another room or something, but
no.
You broke up. Can you tell us? We lost you at the Jewish prayer.
Yeah, can you hear me now? Is that better?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So there's a part of the Jewish prayer service where it talks about, you know, let my soul be as dust to people who criticize me, and I think that we're going to have to adopt that idea because we're going to get hit with blame for Hillary because everybody who selected Trump in the primaries and backed him so ardently, they have to shift the blame somewhere. We're just going to have to keep the focus. We're going to have to ignore it. We're just going to have to keep the focus where it ought to be, which is on attacking the left, attacking Hillary Clinton. And look, I think that the recriminations are going to last longer than they did after 2012. I mean, it is amazing. I don't remember after 2012 the whole Republican, a large swath of the Republican Party turning on the Trump people who didn't show up for Romney and saying, it's your fault Romney wasn't elected. But the Trump people, some of them, are going to do it to us this time. But you know, I think that fades away over time. People have short memories, and the only thing that's going to matter is how do we stop Hillary's agenda. So alliances of convenience, as the Republican Party has shown, are not foreign to the Republican Party or a lot of people who are in it.
Ben, this is Stu, and it's very rare that we have award-winning journalists on this program. You have won the award for the number one journalistic target of anti-Semitism on the Internet. Congratulations. I mean, you have to look at this. I mean, it must be just a nightmare to even sign on to Twitter or any of these places these days with this stuff going on. I mean, not only were you the number one target of anti-Semitism, it was by a really, really large margin.
I know what it's like, Ben, to sign on for me, the things that they say. My wife blew a gasket the other day. I just got an email, and she said, you are never talking to another person in the press ever, ever again. I don't care who it is. I don't care what happens. You're never talking to another member of the press. I can't imagine what it's like to be you with the anti-Semitism that is going on. How are you dealing with it?
You know, at a certain point, you sort of tune it out because you have to. But, you know, when on the day of your baby's birth, you're getting notes from, you know, people who write for Breitbart, you know, that are you know, essentially racist. And then you get other notes from people that are just pictures of gas chambers and talk about cockroaches and I hope the four of you die in a gas chamber, that kind of stuff. You know, at a certain point, it moves from the mildly irritating to the actually upsetting. I mean, I've received, according to that ADL survey, there were something like 20,000 anti-Semitic tweets directed at American journalists since March, and I was the recipient of nearly 8,000 of those. So, you know, at a certain point, it's kind of amazing that there are that many people who think you're that important to their lives, they're going to do that. And my feeling has always been that if you're pissing off the mouth-breathing Jew haters, then you're doing something right. So it didn't bother me on any moral level. But I will tell you that it is pretty clear that it's coordinated. I mean, there were certain spike points where people, you know, did it based on the news cycle. There were a couple accounts that were taken off of Twitter. By the way, I'm not an advocate of taking people off Twitter for anti-Semitism. I retweet these people because I think it's important to expose them. But there are a couple of people who were taken off of Twitter when Milo Yiannopoulos was booted off of Twitter, which I didn't advocate for. When that happened, the amount of anti-Semitism in my feed dropped by at least 50%. So this, you know, when people ask, why are you concerned about the Breitbart alt-right movement? Why are you worried about Trump, you know, being kind of infused with that? Well, it's because the major players in that movement are a problem. I mean, they believe some pretty terrible things, and our fellow travelers are people who believe even worse things.
Ben, I have to tell you, we've been fan of yours for a very long time, but this last year has really shown people's colors. And I don't know if the people who read you or listen to you on the radio understand difficulty that you have put up with and anybody who has taken this stand. It's a very, very brave thing to do. And we've been watching you for the last year, and we're really impressed, really impressed. Can I switch topics? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that's high praise coming from you, obviously, because of the people who have taken a lot of hits in this election cycle, you're definitely number one on that list. So it's been brutal, and I'm just hoping that after this election cycle, we can move into a period where people actually go back to principle instead of sort of the tribal fight that they've wanted to engage in.
You've written a novel. You want to tell us about it?
Sure, that'd be great. The novel's called True Allegiance, and it sort of take all of the political crises we're facing in the country and ratchet them up by a factor of about 50%, and it talks about what the dissolution of the country would look like. And the reason that I wrote it as fiction as opposed to writing sort of a nonfiction book on what the future looks like is mainly because, I mean, and Glenn, I know you've been a proponent of this for a long time. Andrew Breitbart, my former mentor, was a proponent of this as well, the idea that culture is upstream of politics. And if you tell in a story what you can't necessarily say in nonfiction, you know, here's one possible future. Here's how bad things are on everything from the border to government encroachments on land rights to race relations in inner cities, then people are more likely to read it and take it seriously, oddly enough, than they are to take a nonfiction book about the same topic seriously. Plus, you end up with more readers. Ayn Rand did more for capitalism probably than Milton Friedman did, just because there's so many more people who read Atlas Shrugged. So the idea was to take all of these crises, stack them up one on another, and say, okay, see, how close are we really to everything collapsing? And I have to say, I wrote the thing, you know, maybe a year and a half ago. I started writing it. I completed it probably a year ago. And since then, half the stuff in the book came true. So it turns out that I thought it was all, you know, 30 years away, and it may only be about 15 years away, which is a little scary.
I did the same thing. We published, what was it, Eye of Moloch. I don't remember what it was. It was the NSA stuff. The Eye of Moloch, it was a novel that I wrote, and it was about the spying on American citizens and how the NSA was going to do this and everything else. And I wrote it. It took about, you know, it took about a year and a half to write. And we put it out, and the day it came out was the day that I think the WikiLeaks story broke. We're like, good heavens, man, this is supposed to be in the future. It's amazing.
It is incredible how the future has accelerated. I mean, all of the worst fictional things that I talk about in True Allegiance, again, a lot of them came true. Like, I wrote about major race riots in an American city and the attempt by the race rioters to kind of mainstream their politics into the politics of the upper echelon of the city. And obviously that's now been happening in pretty much every major Democrat-controlled city in America.
Tell me about the scenarios that you put in the book that you thought were 30 years away.
So, I mean, the one that I talk about at length is a major race riot breaking out in a major American city, and the government, led by the President of the United States, essentially pushing the notion that the government, the local government, should give in to the race rioters and allow them to take leadership of the local government. And obviously we've seen things along those lines from the President of the United States. I talk about precipitous pullout from a country, in this case Afghanistan, that leads to the rise of a major terrorist group that hooks up with Iran to start pursuing nuclear terrorism. And, you know, it turned out I had the wrong country. The precipitous pullout from Iraq is what caused the rise in ISIS. But the idea of a precipitous pullout causing a rise in a major terrorist group, I wrote that before the rise of ISIS. I talked about the idea of raids across the southern border from Mexican drug cartels causing tensions on the border such that the governor of Texas has to start disobeying the federal government in attempts to enforce the border, causing serious conflict between the state of Texas and the president of the United States. Obviously, you can see that beginning to materialize now with all the hubbub about the southern border.
Ben, this isn't 30 years in the future. This was Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I have to sell it now, because it'll be in the history
book. It's a history book very soon.
Now.
I don't want you to tell me the whole story, but is there a solution to these problems that you see? Are you, in this novel, are you proposing solutions?
Well, I mean, there's some solutions, and I think the number one solution that I sort of propose is that everybody start relying on basic human decency, which I know sounds ridiculous, but that's what we've come down to in this country, is are we going to have a country founded on individual decency, or are we going to have a country founded on everybody taking advantage of the situation at hand? But the book does, you know, I don't want to give away the ending of the book, but I will say that not everything is resolved peachy keen, because I'm not sure that everything is resolved so peachy keen easily. I think that these are deep, abiding conflicts, and I think that things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. But people of principle are going to have to band together, because tough times are coming. If we do that, then I think that we're going to be able to rebuild from some pretty bad things that are about to happen. But I think that it may be, I mean, not to be a pessimist, but I think it's late to forestall some of the worst things that are already happening from taking further material effect.
Ben, I was talking to a guy yesterday. I was having a meeting, and a pretty famous commentator, and he just stopped by the studios to say hi, and we were having a private conversation, and he said to me, I no longer believe people are good. He said, I used to. He said, I used to believe. He said, I've heard you say a million times, you know, you put good against evil side by side, and Americans will always pick good. He said, I don't think so. Do you?
I think that unless there is a serious revival in morality in the country, I agree with your friend. And I think, by the way, our founders didn't believe that people were naturally good. I think our founders, as they say in Federalist 51, they believe that people are capable of good, they're capable of evil. That's why you can't have a government that's overpowering, because the people who run it could be evil. And the only way that you're actually going to protect liberty is with a decent citizenry. Obviously, the Republican Party, conservatives have done a very poor job of maintaining the culture, maintaining the educational system, maintaining the media. And a lot of these values have dripped down all the way into, you know, what was shocking to me about this election, Glenn, is that I didn't realize how far a lot of this had dripped down into our own party. You always like to think of yourself as sort of you're on the side of the angels, and people on your own team aren't part of the tribal problem. And then you look around and you realize some of the people on your own team are not really on your team. And that came as a rude awakening to me. I mean, you mentioned the anti-Semitism thing a little bit earlier. I was always of the opinion that the vast, you know, anti-Semitic left was a much bigger threat with regard to anti-Semitism than the right. I really had never seen it. Look, I'm a guy who wears a yarmulke every day. I'd never seen anti-Semitism from the right. Virtually all of the anti-Semitism I received this year was from the alt-right. So, you know, that came as a shock to me. I think that we're going to need to re-inculcate values from the most basic level with our kids, because people just don't know anything about not only basic economics and basic politics, but basic decency. Because in the end, politics is just a reflection of values. When you have an entire generation of voters who are looking at Bernie Sanders as some sort of savior and socialism is a good moral thing, and that's our fault. I mean, that's because we haven't done enough. It's because my parents' generation hasn't done enough, because I have to do a better job as a father in order to rectify the breach. And that's going to be a long process. That's not something that happens overnight. I don't think that we're one election away from restoring the country. I think we're one generation away from restoring the country. And the idea that Reagan said that liberty's always one generation away from disappearing, you know, I think that liberty's always one generation from restoration, but it's going to be a hard generation of work.
How old are you, Ben?
I'm 32.
So you're a millennial. How much faith do you have in the millennials?
I think that it's opening to millennials. I think the millennials are bored. I think the millennials don't pay a lot of attention to politics. I think they're dispossessed. They don't like all of the institutions. So there's not the same faith in the government and the same faith in the media that you see with the boomers. So there's an opening there. I think they're susceptible to basic reason, but they have to be pushed off the unearned moral superiority they feel. And I speak at probably 30 colleges a year. And when I speak at these colleges, the first thing that I do is I immediately take the feelings question off the table by basically saying, you know, you think that you're a good person because you believe these things politically. Here's why what you believe politically is actually immoral and it hurts people. And it's an argument that people who are young have never heard before, because they've grown up in a milieu that's told them that the way to assure your ascent to political heaven is just by voting Democrat, or by saying socialism is a great system of redistribution, or by talking about white privilege. When you say, look, the real way to be a good person is to actually be a good person, I agree with you that when young people are presented with the argument for good, then they will become more good. But if they're never presented with the argument for good, then and they're just told that politics is politics and everybody's corrupt and the whole system's rigged and nobody's good in the end, and then it's get yours at the table before somebody else takes it away from you, or if you're talking about the ultimate sacrifice that you can make is voting somebody else's money away, then you're going to go with this side that gives you a feeling of moral superiority. And failing to recognize that on the part of the right has been a mistake.
Do you think that, do you see when you're speaking out in universities, when you really start to teach some of these things, do you see the millennials at all get a little pissed that they've kind of been robbed by people who have been teaching them garbage?
Yeah, are they ticked
at all? Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a backlash that's building. I mean, I get probably somewhere between 50 and 100 emails every day, and all from millennials, people who are my age or younger, who are excited that who've watched there are these videos on YouTube that have started to go viral called Ben Shapiro Thug Life videos, where somebody took like my kind of destroying somebody debate, and then they put sunglasses on me and Obey hat on me, and it's really ridiculous stuff, but it's become very popular with young folks. And I get a lot of emails from young people saying, I was never even exposed to basic sexual arguments or moral arguments. And if you speak this passionately about what is good and true, then I think the young people resonate to that. It's actually one of the areas where I do have hope. I speak on enough college campuses that I have hope for young people. I actually have less hope for some of the baby boomers than I do for people who are my own age and younger. I think a lot of people my own age and younger are still malleable. They don't know a lot. They haven't been taught a lot. And when they're made aware of arguments they've never heard before, they're kind of shocked by it. They're actually vulnerable in that way because they're being blindsided by the truth.
Ben Shapiro, always good to talk to you, sir. Thank you so much. And thanks for all of your hard work and taking such a hard stand. Ben Shapiro, editor-in-chief of DailyWire.com. Thank you so much, Ben.
Really appreciate it, Glenn.
You bet.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-490-1099 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-490-1099.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.